UK Wine Show, show number 188. IWSC, a green debate. G'day. Welcome to the UK Wine Show. It's show number 188 for the 1st of January 2009. My name's Chris Scott, and on this week's rather shortened show, or perhaps even a longer show, we're going to be listening to the IWSC's Green Debate that was recorded about 3 months ago. The debate is about an hour long, so I hope you enjoy it, and next week we're back to our normal shows.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you all very much for coming and girding your loins for what I know is going to be a fascinating debate. I should say, firstly, before we go any further, that the word debate is going to be used, you can either say in its strict sense or non-strict sense. This is very much a debate like the sort of Oxford Union debates of, is an apple better than an orange? We're not really as fixated on who wins or loses this. What's going to be interesting, I think, is the quality of discussion and covering the ground of what is a very large subject, and I think that's something that we should really try and cover it without getting too bogged down. So we've got a nice contentious title, Green Fad or Future. What I'll say is I think each of my four panelists, to whom I'll introduce in a second, would have been able to stand on the other side of the line from the one they're going to be taking, but they're all personfully been happy to join in to take the side they're going to do. I think I'll introduce my panel first, seeing who they are, then I'd like to say a few words in introduction really get you going, because I've said to the panelists that I'd like them to do less than 10 minutes each, and I'm going to actually pour a glass of cold water over. Yeah, well, no, they said, 10 minutes was absolute. I mean, I had five, but a definite glass of cold water over anyone who exceeds their time. So, going from this side of the room, Nicola Jenkin, drinks category manager from RAP, who many of you will have read about in the last few months, a few years, really, as we've moved heavily into thinking about how we're going to package wine. Started a career in South Africa, working in the field of waste management, which is sort of thoughts of having to deal with very nasty stuff quite a lot of the time, but also environmental and development education. It's a master's degree in environmental education for industry and business, and moved to the UK in 2000, took up her position at RAP in 2005, and has worked for Best Foot Forward, specialists in ecological and carbon footprinting. Current role of RAP sees a focus on the reduction of environmental impact with a particular focus on packaging and waste. So that's one strand, but I think you're going to be talking about quite a lot beyond that. Peter Derbyshire, I think everyone in this room will know, MD at PLB, one of the UK's largest suppliers to multiple trade. I mean, one of the very largest, I think, is probably the accurate way to look at that. More larger recently, since April 2007. Companies long had suppliers with very strong green agendas. You never get anyone saying the companies had a long relationship with grubby suppliers, either, really, I think. But the question is, who is green out there? And it'd be interesting to hear from Peter the relationship that having relationship with people who are overtly green, as opposed to people who say, well, we are green, but we don't like to make a thing of it, I think is going to be relevant. Green is as high on its list of operating principles as on those of its customers, which in many cases will mean not at all, obviously. Prior to joining PLB, Peter was MD in a number of the companies, leading green companies, including Thierry's, Rosemount, Glenmorangie, and Drambuie. It's going back in time, so it's spirits into wine, and some of you may have seen Peter at the WSTA low alcohol thing last week, which was talking about low alcohol wine. So there's a trend here. So 2 years' time, Coca-Cola or something totally non-alcoholic. Angela Mount, again, I think most of you, if not all, will know her, was head of buying for Summerfield and the only person in the world still to have your taste buds insured for, how much was it?
Only 10 million,
but you know, 10 million isn't worth what it was, so you probably need them going up. So, but now is a consultant, freelance consultant to the industry, regular presenter at various events, and as a new venture, which he may mention. But I think very relevant to have on both sides of me the two sides of in the sense we've got Peter, who's got to sell wine to the people who sell it. And Angela, who has experience of actually selling it to the people who drink it. And that's, I think, going to be relevant. And then, lastly, Michael Cox, who you definitely will all know, 20 years at Matthew Clark, then Startup UK office for Yolumba in 1990, and 2003 set up the UK office for Wines of Chile. And again, some of you will have seen Michael at the Chilean Day tasting before that, announcing Chile's strong move into sustainable production. And so that's another area. So Michael can take the view of the generics, if you like, rather than a specific company. And I'd like just to just throw in some ideas before we get these four guys and guyettes going. The ground rule is 5 minutes maximum, 10 minutes for each of them to state some sort of case. And on this side of the room, they are supporting the idea that, they're actually fighting it. They're saying that it's the real thing. And on this side, we've got the people saying that it is a marketing ploy. And once you've had those four presentations, the ball is very much in the field, and I'd like to hear a lot from you. There are two roving mics, and please argue, comment. Any of you who saw a certain well-watched program last night will be aware that possibly the most successful moment in the entire BBC Griffin Question Time saga was the member of the audience who suggested that there'd be a whip round to send Mr. Griffin to Antarctica where it was all white and he'd be happy. So I'd be very happy if the best interventions of the day or some of them came from the floor. If I can just throw in just some of the areas that I'd like us to look at, and I'd also like to state, to make a disclosure, if you like. I didn't choose the title of this debate, but I'm very happy to be doing it, but I should make a disclosure, which is I, since no longer being chairman of the Wine Challenge, International Wine Challenge here, and publishing editor of Wine Magazine, have been involved in producing wine, so I now am involved in producing conventional wine in France, organic and sustainable. And I am sitting very much on the fence on this subject. I'm very happy to be neutral because I have very mixed feelings about it. And I'll kick off with that because at the lowest level of greenness, well, the very lowest level of greenness is the package. And I'm looking at putting things into PET. We'll hear from Nicola about light glass and pouches and other things. But the question of whether the consumer is ready for those packages, those forms of packaging, is a very open one. They actually like heavy bottles in some cases because it makes them feel they're getting a good experience when they buy it. So packaging is one area. Sustainability. What does sustainable mean? Michael's going to talk a little bit about that from Chile's point of view. When we started, when I wanted to launch a French sustainable wine, I discovered the word doesn't exist in French. The words lutte raisonnée, which are basically untranslatable, are as meaningless once you've translated them as anything else. If anyone wants to see them, I can give you the charter of the French lutte raisonnée. There isn't even a national charter. It varies from region to region. But the one that I love best says you have to have a washroom for your staff. You're not allowed to burn any rubbish in your vineyards. You mustn't use any chemicals that are not designed for use in vineyards. And don't use any more than it says on the side of the packet. And if you do all of that, you are a sustainable wine producer in France. And so far, 84% of the French wine industry, well, it's actually not fair because there are some organics, but certainly 80% of the French wine industry has failed to sign up. So it'd be interesting to hear about sort of what sustainable does mean from country to country and whether it means anything to the consumer. Organic going up, what does organic mean? I was in Germany and talking to a German producer, and I was there with an American, and the American says, so how much sulfur do you use for these organic wines? And the guy says, really? And of course, in America, you can't use sulfur on organic wines, and in German, you can. So the word organic doesn't mean the same thing in two different parts of the world. And then in America, you have wine made from organically grown grapes, which is what I'm doing, which is a different product to organic wine. So that's another area. And does the consumer really understand any of that? Biodynamic, that seems pretty easy, but not easy. You just sign up to this whole list of Looney Tunes rules and make better wine. I yesterday met a man who's got Southbrook, a lovely Canadian winery, first biodynamic winery, major winery in Canada, and he said, we're all certified, and I said, do you do the cow horn thing? And he said, yep, we do it all. He said, I really don't have much time for people who don't actually follow all the rules, the sort of people who do biodynamics light, so they don't stir. You know, they don't do the full 100 stirs in each direction. They only do 50 or whatever. Maybe they use a dog skull rather than a cow horn. But his point was, you're either biodynamic or you're not. But is that clear to the consumer? Because there are now, we're getting wines out there with grown with biodynamically grown grapes. So we don't, but we don't do the cow horn. Then we've obviously got carbon neutral, which is bringing us back to, I think everyone in the room, but Nicola's probably got more to say on that. But what does that mean, really? Are they planting trees somewhere? Are they paying somebody else to plant trees where they don't need trees? Or are they actually bringing in solar panels and so on at the winery? And that moves us, obviously, very naturally onto shipping. As David Cox sitting in the room could say, and I'm sure Michael will say, if you've actually, it's certainly true of meat, if you're not using huge amounts of fossil fuels to keep your animals indoors or to actually treat your vineyards, the fact that you've had to ship it across the world is going to do less environmental damage than what some of the conventional people are doing in a few hundred miles to the south of us in France. So very, very complex, all of this. So the word green is covering a vast, and fair trade I've deliberately left out of this because it's not part of it, but I think in many people's minds it's a little bit confused into it because sustainability has a little bit of fair trade. And the real point that I think is ties it all together is when you look at the motion that you've got in front of you, the House believes the promotion of environmental credentials is a marketing ploy. We're not saying you should be green, you shouldn't be green. That, to me, is a relatively is a question of how green you want to be. It's really, should you promote your greenness? How should you promote your greenness? And is that legitimate to promote it if the situation is confused and you're merely confusing or potentially misleading consumers? So I'd like us all to keep in mind the most important person, who is the person who is not in this room as such. Everyone in this room is a consumer of wine, but we're all too close to the subject. We should bear in mind that there is a lady standing in Sainsbury's and a man standing in Majestic at this minute trying to decide what to buy. And this is what all this stuff is going to apply to. So in the support of the motion, I would like to ask Mr. Cox to kick off with his 5 minutes.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Robert. Green, fad or future, to put it another way, green, is it sustainable? Can we keep it up? In 2007, an environmental firm released a study called The Six Sins of Greenwashing. And in that survey, over 1,000 common consumer products were found that 99% of them were guilty of greenwashing. Of those making environmentally friendly claims, only one was found not guilty of making a misleading green marketing claim. The six sins include no proof, vagueness, irrelevance, fibbing. When one sees expressions used in our daily lives like clean coal, the ultimate climate change oxymoron, it's no wonder that there is a level of cynicism amongst consumers. However, it has got to the stage where it's not a case of whether we are in favour of green credentials. It's more a question of can we afford to be seen not to embrace greenness and eco-friendliness. There is such a clamour to save the planet. Actually, it's not the planet we need to worry about. The planet spent millennia adapting itself to climate change. It's us that we need to save. What we think and believe is not always what we do in our daily lives. If we believe there is a global environmental problem, it is frequently too easy to think that what we do is too insignificant to make an impact, partly because we are selfish and NIMBYist, and partly because the issues are too huge and complex to get to grips with. The overriding problem with wine is that the vast majority of consumers believe wine to be purer than a Vestal Virgin already. This is why organic wine, or wine made from organically grown grapes, does not resonate with wine drinkers, at least not yet. And they certainly seem unwilling to pay a premium for organic wine, despite paying premiums for other organic produce. We are even prepared to pay for recyclable carrier bags, but would not countenance paying extra for a bottle of wine that is in a lightweight bottle. Most multiple retailers will pay lip service to any of wine's green credentials at present. What will drive them is margin, maintenance, cost savings, and price-driven footfall. But I'm sure that we will hear more about the retailer perspective shortly. So the real challenge for the wine trade, as if we didn't have enough challenges already, is to use greenwash to embed into the consciousness of the wine drinker that grape growing and winemaking, like all other forms of agriculture, are part of a world in which humanity is living in a manner that is unsustainable. Hence the word sustainable becomes more important than organic, because sustainability is what is going to help repair the damage, and it covers all aspects of the winemaking process, not just the growing of healthy grapes, untainted by artificial and damaging viticultural practices. But the dilemma for wineries is that having a social conscience and doing their bit for the world does not appear to sell more bottles. But then 10 years ago, I don't suppose many people would have predicted that the rapid acceptance and markability of screw caps. In other words, it is an initiative that will be market and producer driven, not actually consumer led. In Chile, every winemaker knows that they are blessed with almost perfect geographical and climatic conditions for natural and healthy fruit growing, the envy of the world. And although generically we use the phrase wines of Chile, the natural choice, it is actually quite difficult to make this nebulous statement actually mean something on a bottle of Chilean wine. Another Southern Hemisphere country once used the phrase the products of a clean green land in the hope that this image would register. Perhaps it should have been the products of a clean wet green land, but that's another matter. It certainly helps, and most consumers would probably think that wines from Chile or New Zealand are going to be somewhat purer than wine from vineyards surrounding Chernobyl. But it's not enough. What the bottles need is something more tangible, which is why Chile is developing a sustainable code of practice to which all wineries will sign up and be independently monitored across a range of processes, from grape to bottle and even beyond. If the practices pass muster, the bottles can carry an internationally accredited sustainability logo. This is not groundbreaking, nor unique to Chile. A number of other countries are developing similar schemes. But the manner to which Chile has embraced this concept and the relative ease most will have in achieving sustainable goals indicate that Chile could well have been the setting for the classic novel, How Green Was My Valley. The problem, however, is making all these eco-friendly greenwash meaningful in the context of wine. It's difficult enough for the trade to communicate wine-related facts to entice, educate, and enthrall its consumer. If back labels that wax lyrical about tropical notes, soft tannins, mouthfeel, and minerality aren't enough to confuse, what hope do we have with subjects like pest management, soil nutrition, and solid waste policy? In a way, that's the beauty of greenwash. It tends not to clutter the issue with detail. If Chilean wine can be identified by the consumer simply as natural and sustainable, it ticks the green box in the consciousness, and they can live and breathe happily as they drive home alone to their centrally heated houses. So, yes, as marketing is all about satisfying consumer needs, greenwash is and will be an effective marketing ploy.
How are we tracking on time?
We're a little bit over.
I might just move these things away.
My hand was reaching for the water there, but not quite.
Okay.
It was such a good presentation.
Okay, morning, folks. The environmental credentials divide rather neatly into two different arenas. It's how you make something, and then how you package something. There's a bit in the middle, which is how you get what you've made to the consumer, the food miles, but I'm not going to touch on that. I didn't know enough about it. It's a very complex area. So today, Nicola and myself are going to talk about those two different aspects. I get to talk about the packaging aspect, and Nicola will focus more on the how you make something in an environmentally friendly way. So, first question. When you have a tank of wine, where do you pack that tank of wine? What is the point of pack? Should you ship it in a tank and pack it at the point of consumption? That's quite clearly the greener option. And yet there is an arrogance amongst producers saying only we can pack our wine. 100 years ago, that was valid. It stopped fraud, it stopped adulteration. But nowadays, the traceability, if you want, of a wine, the analysis of a wine, you can tell very, very quickly if it's been adulterated. So therefore, the green solution is to move the point of pack as close to the consumer as possible. It coincides at the moment with the agenda of the retailers, which is to take all cost out. And so, coincidentally, at the moment, the point of pack is moving to the UK and away from the point of production, and that is the green solution. Sadly, it is driven, as Michael quite rightly pointed out, by retailer price or margin maintenance considerations more than by green ones, but they do coincide. Second question, how many of the components that are used in that packing are actually recyclable? And is recycling itself a new concept? Well, if you go back to the beginning of the human race, I think recycling is built into our genes. It's only really post the Second World War that the idea of a disposable society has taken root. How many people here grew up in an environment where clothes were passed down from one child to another, from one family to another, where toys were recycled within families?
Still do.
Few people nodding, and a few people looking completely blank. So, certainly for me, recycling was just a way of life. It's what families did because it was cheaper, it was more effective, it was better. I think one of the societal issues is the breakup of the family groupings. When families live close to each other, recycling was easy. When families are far apart, you're not going to get into your car, load the old tricycle, the old clothes, whatever. Quite apart from the reaction you get from your children if you try to put them into someone else's non-Nike trainers. So I think recycling is a key issue. One of the things, sadly, that producers do is they don't look at recyclability. For instance, let's take glass. One of the issues in the UK is the type of glass that is actually useful when it's recycled. Essentially, it's white flint, because that's what UK glass users want. What we ship all the wine in? Green flint. What happens to green flint? We sort it all out, put it into the right bins. At best, it will go to a crushing plant and be recycled into road surfaces. At worst, it's tipped straight into landfill. So lip service recycling, we don't think about it as an industry enough. We should be shipping wine in packages that can be recycled effectively back in the UK. Consumer impressions. Consumers have been taught by us that the heavier the bottle that the wine is in, the more expensive the wine is going to be. Well, that's self-evident to a certain extent. The more glass there is, the more expensive it's going to be. But the added value of heavy glass, I think marketeers are driven by how something looks and feels rather than by the sustainable credentials of that particular product. I would like to see lightweight bottles in Bordeaux and Burgundy. I don't think it'll happen in my lifetime, but maybe in 20 years, maybe in 50 years. We are a very reactionary and trade by instinct. Cork versus screw cap. Michael alluded to screw cap. Instinctively, cork feels greener. We are fed some interesting quotes and statistics by the cork industry about how it protects the environment, how it protects cork forests in different parts of the world. They don't talk about the industrial processes that cork go through, the coatings, the chemicals. Screw cap and cork, they're both going to wind up in the same place in landfill. So I think the credentials there. For me, screw cap is a greener option than a cork option. You have secondary use with a screw cap bottle. You can refill it with something else. Not important in our society, but in many societies around the world, containers of that sort, which can be reused, are an important part of their lives. So, capsules. The wine industry had to be dragged kicking and screaming away from lead capsules. Now, we loved our lead capsules. The spirits industry loved their lead capsules as well. The quality feel of it all. Poisonous, fine. Some of it leached through the cork into the product, fine. It's still a lovely feel to lead capsule. We are still addicted to tin capsules. It gives a quality feel. Again, I would like to see packaging de-specced so capsules were not a mandatory part of any look. Capsules serve no useful purpose. They're only purely decorative. Tell a designer, you can't use a capsule. They go white. But capsules are decorative. So again, this is recyclability. Are these components necessary? It's very easy to dissect every component in packaging that goes into wine to show that most cases, every single aspect of that packaging can be improved. I think as a firm believer in sustainability and green, I am a late convert. I am much more in this wake of Jeremy Clarkson. I was not at the forefront of change. I do think as an industry, we do need to look much more closely at all those components and find a greener way. So, how do you persuade a deeply conservative industry, an industry that has shown it's really resistant to change without external compulsion? Will that compulsion come from government or from the consumer? Michael is quite right. The most effective change is consumer-driven. And God help us if we rely on government. Like we're awash with platitudinous, ill-thought-through directives. We are blamed for all the societal ills of alcohol abuse, as if we as an industry held each consumer down and poured wines, spirits, alcopops down their throats. So please protect us from government intervention. So the second part is the consumer pressure to become more environmentally aware. Well, there is no evidence that many, but not all, consumers, once their basic needs are met, want to buy environmentally friendly products, but they are confused as to how to identify those products. That is the key issue, and I'm at one with Michael there. consumers are aware of the need for remedial action by themselves and by society collectively. The younger the age profile, the stronger this awareness, and there's a lesson here for wine. If we want to bring young consumers into wine, we do have to find a formula to tell them how green a product is. They really do check on those things. Young people, my children, they do not buy cars. They do not run cars. Not because they can't afford to, because they choose not to. It's an environmental statement. And that is something that runs through their lives. As a wine industry, and I'm talking about wine here, we tend to rely rather smugly on the over 35 consumer. And we're not doing enough to attract the new younger consumer. And I would argue that a well thought through environmental policy or strategy is a very good plank to pull in young people. How am I doing on time?
You're coming up to water
okay,
time.
30 seconds away from a cold shower. I'll wrap up very quickly. What consumers are saying is that they want green credentials around their products, but they don't want to pay a premium, and they don't feel they should pay a premium for environmentalism. A cynical use of green credentials to drive premium pricing doesn't wash with modern consumers. Consumers want to have a cleaner conscience, but they don't want to be poorer as a result. And the two things are not contradictory. You can have a cleaner conscience, and you need not be poorer. But that conscience does only kick in when the basic needs are met. So finally, defending the motion, or for the motion, I should say, the core of marketing is understanding the consumer and giving them what they want. If a significant part of your audience want environmentally friendly products, then greenness is not a marketing ploy. It is fundamental marketing. It's not a ploy. And just one final word of warning. Research does show that don't patronize your consumer with smug greenness. And if you don't believe it and you're faking it, they'll really quickly pick you up.
Thank you very much. No, thank you.
I'm going to save questions as you realize at the end, but I've got at least five questions that I've got ready bubbling up on those two, so I hope you've got a lot to come as well. The ball gets passed to Angela.
Thank you, Robert. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to be speaking very much from an independent industry perspective. I seem to now get sort of wheeled out and cobwebs dusted off as sort of an ex-retailer who's going to spill all the beans. I want to balance...
Green beans.
I want to balance the impact of worldwide issues, consumer trends and socioeconomic trends and industry responsibility with commercial reality. I believe that the promotion of environmental credentials in wine is essentially a marketing ploy, a very convenient marketing ploy. Why? Without being cynical, it ticks all the boxes. If we look at the bigger picture, if we look at corporates, if we look at the retailers, the stats are very clear. Sainsbury's are looking to reduce packaging by 33% by 2012. Asda's targets are the same. It is an issue which is facing all the retailers, and they are dealing with it in a very proactive way. Commercial benefit. Well, consumers and government are demanding greener, leaner packaging. What progress has really been made, and how radical in the wine industry do we need to be? Now, the green issue is very important, and I certainly support that, and part of our daily lives, which, as I've said before, suppliers and retailers are keen to embrace. But it suits the retailer and it suits the producer. Why? As Michael has said, as Peter has acknowledged, cost savings, margin improvements. There is a 20 to 25% saving on UK bottling. There's a 12 to 14 pence CCT saving on bulk over glass. It's cheaper to ship a container in bulk than a container bottled. and there is up to a 35% saving in the use of lighter glass. So the mix is perfect. The opportunity to deliver cost savings in the current economic climate merges well with the green debate. So I'm cynical about using green issues to promote wine, and without naming names, I can certainly confirm that a number of ex-buying colleagues feel the same. Wine is already viewed by the consumer as a fairly natural product. There is still the view that consumers think about vineyards and chateaus rather than the refinery-style wineries of the New World, but it is still viewed essentially as a natural product. Glass is viewed as recyclable. Therefore, why does the consumer feel potentially that we need to go even greener? The other point to make is there's lots of debate about this at the moment. And given the focus that the government is putting on binge drinking, responsibility, etc., there have been very few government initiatives and directives and no real guidance on this particular issue. So there's been a massive amount of work and a massive amount of cost, but not a huge amount of guidance. My view is beware of grabbing seemingly easy solutions and look at the bigger picture. Another question, by leaping on the green bandwagon, could we be creating a problem for the broader socio-economic crisis and issues? I'll come on back to that in a second. I want to look at two aspects, the first of which is packaging. Now, is this really to benefit environmental credentials, or is it to secure that USP, to succeed in achieving that word that we all long for in the wine industry, innovation? Let's look at some innovative ideas. Sorry. Lightweight bottles. We've mentioned pouches. Arniston Bay have launched in pouches. Fantastic innovation. We all agree that. Yes, the pouches have only 20% of the environmental impact of glass, but they're not recyclable and they're not biodegradable, but it's a great innovation. Plastic bottles. Wolf Blast launched in PET 2 years ago. Is plastic more recyclable than glass? Was this really an environmentally driven decision, or could it be something to do with the fact that actually plastic bottles are also much, much more convenient and safer to use in sporting stadiums, and with Wolf Blast being a big supporter, an official sponsor of cricket and rugby, I think, potentially there is an element of convenience in that decision. Tetra, Tesco have launched Spanish and Chile now in a Tetra Pak. Again, the consumer is used to Tetra Paks now because of milk, because of orange cartons, and therefore is used to that particular container. Cost savings come into the equation again. Let's look at UK bottling. I've detailed the savings, but let's think back 10 years ago. 10 years ago, when the New World explosion was really happening and when the big promotional volumes were starting to be driven, at that stage, 10 years ago, really it was only cheap wines and promotional wines that were shipped over in bulk and bottled in this country. Why? Because there was a concern about quality, about the treatment of wine over here to deliver the same quality as it would have had at source. And certainly at the time, the fact that the wines were UK bottled was not publicised. There was much more marketing and quality kudos in terms of focusing on the positives of bottling at source. Now, obviously, technology has changed and there have been a lot of improvements in UK bottling. But suddenly, it's cool to bottle. Why? Is it really just because of the green issue, or is it because those cost savings that we actually had to keep quite quiet about 10 years ago, because we needed to do them for that promotional volume to hit those prices, now it's cool because it's green. Again, I play the cynic. Cost and quality. Again, look at the bigger picture. Let's take South Africa. South Africa has environmental issues entrenched into their wine culture, and Michael referred to Chile. From 2010, there will be a message regarding sustainability on the wines of origin seal on all bottles. Everything's hand-harvested. South Africa has the shortest shipping time in terms of New World countries, and therefore a lower carbon footprint. But bottling in the UK for South African wines impacts on the socio-economic and black workers' opportunities. So there we start to look at the bigger picture. To develop the green credentials over here, we are potentially damaging the socio-economic development in South Africa. I also find it convenient and interesting to see that two of the biggest brands in South Africa still bottle at source. Why? Certainly, it helps the socio-economic climate over there. Also, it happens that they have big bottling plants there. They have put a big investment over there, and therefore there are cost benefits. Interestingly enough, when you look at retailer own brand ranges, with three exceptions, South Africa is one of the few New World countries where the own brand range is still bottled at source. Is that because the retailers are looking to support the socio-economic culture over there, or is it because until recently, certainly, actually bottling in South Africa was cheaper than bottling in the UK? I have worked on a number of projects, both at Summerfield and with clients, and been party to discussions where new brands have been launched, and certainly one well-known brand who's expanded into a new world area. And I've been party to debates where the discussion has been the supplier would prefer to bottle at source for the reasons I've mentioned, so socio-economic ones. The decision has been made to bottle in the UK because of cost. How am I doing on time?
Fine.
Right, okay, just to...
1 minute ago.
I believe that ethical reasons are a convenient marketing ploy. It's not about ethics, it's about cost. I totally support the industry's development of a sustainable code of practice throughout the world. It marries with the worldwide focus on sustainability and the retailers' stated aims to reduce packaging, reduce carbon footprint and drive the green issue. That's not at stake. I totally support the development of environmental credentials. However, I believe that for wine in particular, the green issue is not driven by the consumer for the reasons I've said. The marketing of environmental credentials in wine is often a convenient ploy to save costs, but which marries perfectly with retailer and producer strategies.
I always like it when I find somebody who's being even more cynical than I am.
I'll get shot later.
Thank you. As Peter said, I'm just going to elaborate, expand a little bit more on what he was saying, and also allude to the original sort of title of this debate about the future. And I want to reiterate that the future is actually now, and it's here, and it's real, and it's not just about far-flung islands that are sinking into the sea and polar bears. For the wine industry, it's right on your doorstep. Wine is agriculturally based and as such relies on soil, air and water, amongst other things. An erosion of natural resources, a reduction in water and change to air, some call it climate change, constitutes to a change to the wine sector. Not only on the biophysical, but indirectly on the whole supply chain and the people employed in it. Besides this impact, why else should the wine industry be or take this issue seriously? Well, it's big, very, very big, and its impacts are big. For example, globally, we consume 17.5 billion bottles of wine. This equates to approximately 8.5 billion tons of glass being used in bottles, 3.4 billion litres of embedded water in the product, and that's excluding irrigation. And that is not even to mention train, road, and ship emissions. This interpretation of these statistics can either be taken seriously or as a quick marketing opportunity, which some would classify as greenwashing. Being serious means doing and not talking. It's one thing to talk, but to flit around the countryside in helicopters and go to a lot of flashy dinners and eat prawns. Doing doesn't need to be financially crippling or vast. Activities can vary in scale and type, but they should be genuine and they should be transparent. In addition to being genuine, change still needs to, for example, maintain brand equity and protect the product. Activities can be broad and connect to the whole supply chain, what I like to call grape to glass, or they can be small and incremental and include a variety of options ranging from improved agricultural practices, reduced water and product loss, efficient transport, and we've heard of examples, use of lighter weight bottles and other forms of packaging, bulk transportation, increased recycled content, and or designs for recyclability. And another thing is screw caps. They actually extend product shelf life in the fridge. So there are a whole number of things, but there is no one right way. And I often get called and say, what is the right answer? And I can never give a right answer. It is a simple question, but that is not a simple answer. It's more about deciding which activity of a few of those that I've listed before or activities are best for your product and or your brand. Deciding what actions to take and the implementation thereof is very seldom quick, and this is where I think marketeers want a quick solution. It will probably involve some investment and some elbow grease. Whatever route is chosen, do it properly. Be comfortable with your choice and confident about the changes you are making and why you are making them. Consumers and customers are more knowledgeable these days than they've ever been. So communicate the change where appropriate, wisely, and maintain transparency. Ultimately, it's a cliche, but walk the talk and practice what you preach. This will ultimately reduce environmental impact and costs in the supply chain. You can squabble as to who gets those cost reductions, but ultimately they will happen. And you will definitely get a trusting consumer. So in conclusion, the wine industry is very, very passionate, and it is innovative. There are numerous examples of best practice in sustainability in the sector. So it's about building on this momentum, as this is an issue that is not a fad. For everyone in this room, you are inextricably linked to its future. And taking the environmental issue seriously and acting accordingly, or you may not have a future. Keep it real and keep it now.
Thank you very much. I think there's a lot of food for thought there, obviously organic food. I'm just going to really illustrate my point about wanting to get you guys involved by throwing a question at the floor where I think there's one or two people who might be able to answer it. It has been a given, I think, from us in the front of the room that consumers want green. There's a brand called Bonterra out there, which, as far as I'm aware, is very good at walking the walk as well as talking the talk. I don't see very large organic labeling all over those bottles. And if I'm not mistaken, they seem to be less overtly green in some of the product claims on the bottles than they were. I may be wrong on that, but I think there are one or two people in the room. So I'd be interested to know, anybody who's been in this room who's actually tried to sell organic wines and their experience of doing so to a UK audience. Would anybody like to catch that ball? Mr. Cox, David.
Kate might be able to back me up as well. Let's see how best to answer that. First of all, in fact, can I preface it by saying that I was getting a little bit worried of all the cynicism until I heard Nicola. So I think, thank you, Nicola, because this is all about behavior change. in my view, behavior change with wineries and behavior change with consumers. And with Bonterra, which was grown organically, sold organically, we took the view later on, this is my last company, as you know, but we took the view that this is what we do it anyway. And we believed it was right, believed for the environment, for the planet, and for the quality of the wine. And in the competitive marketplace, we've just took a decision to sell it as a luxury product, which just happened to be organic. Not helped by the fact that, as you know, you can't put the word overtly organic wine on the bottle, on the label. You had to say grown from organically grown grapes. But it was more a question of from the heart. This was grown the way the producers and the winemakers wanted to grow those grapes. And I guess the point I'm making here is that if you take that from a wider perspective, there should be much more leadership, in my view, back at the producers all around the world to say, actually, to quote Marks and Spencers, this should be our plan A because there is no plan B. It is, as Nicholas says, the most intensely environmentally damaging environment we're in, growing grapes in an agricultural sense, especially with the fossil fuels we're using now with chemicals. So therefore, we should be doing it differently because the planet requires us to do that. So there should be behavior change back there with leadership at all levels to say, actually, every country of origin should introduce the sustainability programs that New Zealand have and Chile have just announced. Ours is by 2012, I think the same with Chile. All our wineries have to sign up to a sustainability code in New Zealand by 2012. That's the leadership required for all countries of origin. And then we need behavior change back with our consumers to say, actually, this industry is going to start changing because we need to, and you, Mr. Consumer, need to come with us. Because actually, most of the time, consumers want to see actually people who are doing their bit. We have a breed of ethical consumers out there right now, I believe. So I guess rather long answer of saying that at Bonterra, where we were actually saying we did it because we felt we had to, and that's what it should be like, that's why you didn't see organic all over the bottle. And you'll find a lot of New Zealand producers are saying the same, actually.
We tend to take a very Anglo-centric view of in the wine business. The WCTA seminar on low alcohol, it was interesting to see that it was a UK initiative to try to get Europe to acknowledge, to allow low alcohol reduced wines. The rest of Europe wasn't interested. In reverse, Germany, organic wines are booming. Far more than they are here. There's a huge organic wine fair coming up and food fair, and foods and wines generally, organics are flying there. They're flying in Canada to a greater extent, for example, than they are here. America has not seen the drop in organic sales during the recession that we have. So there's a variation from country to country. But my question really, and I liked your very neatly handled response, but my question is, there are people who have tried to sell organic wine on the shelves of British supermarkets, and British consumers do not seem to have gravitated towards it. And in the case of yours, which is a very good, was yours, but still is good, product, yes, I would drink Bonterra, but I'm not drinking it because it's green. And you haven't said that there was an identifiable group of people who wanted to buy the green luxury product rather than the non-green luxury product. Is that a fair point?
Not helped by the retailers, I must admit, both on-trade and off-trade. If you talk on-trade, how many food and beverage or wait staff or sommeliers would say, I want to promote organic wines on my wine list? Most of them say, there's no call for it, which is a bit of a trite answer. So there's gatekeepers that won't put organic wines on the wine list, and there's gatekeepers in the retailers who actually don't support the fact that there could be a lot of consumers out there who do want to buy organic wine. As you say, it's not helped by the fact that the interpretation of what is organic is a little bit difficult in this country. It's a long haul. If we all start talking more of this whole question of sustainability and organics within it, which is just a higher church of sustainability, then the consumer will come with us. But we've got to stick at it.
Thank you. Another question from the floor, please.
Natasha Hughes, I'm a freelance journalist. Is there not a conflict, especially in the current economic climate? We're talking about production of organic or sustainable wines, which involve increased costs, whereas retailers are trying to drive costs down. Consumers don't want to spend extra money. In fact, the price of wine, the average price per bottle has gone down. Isn't there a conflict about trying to promote sustainable or organic wines in this climate?
I have a real problem with this juxtaposition between cost and the environment. Why can't they be inextricably linked? I mean, what is the problem with saying something like bulk importation? Yes, there are added benefits that it comes with a reduction in carbon and cost. There's nothing wrong with that. Sustainability as well doesn't mean additional cost. I think there are elements in it, such as organic, where there might be a premium, or marketeers use the word organic to indicate a premium product and therefore want to attach a higher price point to it. But if organic just becomes an everyday, we're just doing it because we're doing it, why do you have to make it more expensive? But I think to just say that for something to be green has to therefore be more expensive, and then feel guilty about aligning environment and cost, that all needs to be re-questioned. Sorry, a bit of a passionate response.
Can I just throw in there, I think it depends where you're talking from. I think if you're talking from New Zealand or Chile, being sustainable may not cost more. Speaking personally, in Languedoc-Roussillon, to actually produce a hectolitre of sustainable, in other words, cutting down on all your treatments, actually means a more expensive litre of wine than doing it in the conventional way. It's not hugely more, but it definitely has an impact.
If I can add to that, because as we've alluded to, clearly the consumer is not prepared to pay a premium for organic wine because it doesn't understand that concept. And if you take Chile as an example, and it will not be the only country where this is the case, most producers are not prepared to go that extra mile and indeed considerable extra cost to become certified because there is no benefit. And there is certainly no benefit in terms of image, prestige, and more importantly, premium price that they're able to charge. And I think this comes back to a fundamental point about the consumer attitudes. And you, Robert, alluded to the fact that the consumer is looking for green credentials. And I actually question that.
So I'm interested as well.
It may appear cynical, but indeed, it does not wash. And that's why there is a huge difference between organic and sustainability, which I mentioned. But I think sustainability and the route towards sustainability, which countries such as New Zealand, South Africa, and Chile, and some parts of California and Oregon are moving towards at a very fast rate, is so important, but it's really to do with their responsibility rather than the ability to sell more bottles. That might come as an added benefit later on, but it's actually more to do with social responsibility than actually greater sales.
Yeah, just answering the question about why are Germans more organically minded when it comes to wine than UK consumers? I think the French as well. Now, there is a shortage in France of organic wine. Now, there is a premium attached to organic wine, and yet there isn't in the UK. I think it's very simply, in a country of production, consumers are less naive and starry-eyed about wine. And so in the UK, consumers believe wine is essentially organic and it's produced in lovely vineyards. I don't think French consumers or German consumers have that naivety. So they are prepared to pay a premium, as the British consumer is prepared to pay a premium for organic vegetables or other organic products.
Is that true of Spain or Italy to the same extent? I'm not sure. It's an interesting point. And the question is, yes, California... definitely huge move towards biodynamics, organics, and so on, although not always overtly on labels. So I think it's a very interesting discussable point.
Lynn Whitaker, wine brand. I'm a wine marketing consultant, and I would like to take issue with my brother-in-law in particular, who thinks that there is a breed of ethical consumers out there. It's not my experience that most consumers care greatly about these issues. It might be a nice to have, but it's not a raison d'etre, and if you look at UK consumers and their shopping habits in clothing, for instance, people who buy their clothes at Primark, which an awful lot of people do, don't really care too much about ethical considerations. And I think one of the problems with the whole green thing is that most people who are pushing it are using it as a marketing ploy. Once you've made that your brand platform, that space is occupied, and there's not really an incentive for other people to then join in, because Banrock Station, let's say, have already taken the green platform, or Chile has taken the green platform. So what's the incentive for other people to do a Me Too, because that space is already occupied? And I think that's the problem. It's a great effort to adopt a green platform, and if others have already done so, there's not necessarily competitive advantage to join in.
So when all eggs are free range, then you get to be organic free range, and one day they'll all be organic free range. What happens after that? No, good point. Philip.
Excuse me. My name's Philip Goodband. I'm an independent consultant. I'd like to agree with the point about behavioural change. And Robert, you've mentioned what's going on in North America in particular. I've been quite closely involved with what's going on in a place called Lodi. Lodi has led the field. We talked about leadership a minute ago too, in terms of persuading their producers that less is better. And that comes down to fewer treatments, minimal irrigation, the use of no pesticides, minimal fertilization, and the rest. But this is now stretching into wineries. And if we take all these things together, I mean, I'm working with a winery at the moment where the guys actually have and farm sustainably under the Lodi rules, which is so-called, and they now have a certification. And actually, I'll come back to this question of confusion in a minute, because that's also something which needs to be addressed. They have a winery which is very environmentally friendly, and I won't go into the details and bore you with it now, but it is a very, very interesting concept. They farm 7,500 acres sustainably under the Lodi rules. They make their wine in a winery which is very, very environmentally friendly, on the same basis that, and if I can just read a little short piece, it's about meeting the needs of the present generation without compromising the economic viability of future generations or the environmental stability of the world. And that's the quotation from the guy who owns and farms those 7,500 acres. And they're in their fifth generation, and he wants to leave the business as a successful business, which it is, to his family, to the next generation. And actually, it's the big picture which really matters here. And if everybody takes a small piece of it, and I think this has been mentioned on the panel, then everybody is going to be so much better off. And the consumer knows it. They're not an ethical breed, but the consumer actually does understand that.
Thank you. Another question from the floor.
Thanks, Jerry. Long supplies. I started, I think, one of the
pioneering organic specialists.
Yeah, okay, yes. I started a company called Vince Ramos Wines in 1985 and sold organic wines and other wines, I have to say, for 20 years. And I'd just like to comment on the motion, as it were, which I think is, because it's got the word ploy at the end, implies something negative, as though marketing something about being sustainable or organic is some kind of trick. And in my experience with producers, and rather than retailers, the two, in terms of promotion, we're presumably talking about largely retailers and producers. The vast majority of organic producers that I've met around the planet are committed to doing what they're doing because they believe it is the right thing to do for the consumer and for the environment. And if they are then communicating that in their marketing, I think it's disingenuous to say it's a ploy. I would have thought most people in this room would actually be quite pleased that people were informing consumers that this product is made from organically grown grapes. Of course, there are all the issues about what does organic mean and certification and confusion and so on. But I don't think the vast majority of people that I've met, which is many, many over the years, are making organic wine as some kind of trick. There are a few who have adopted it because they thought there was a market niche and they could make more money, but the vast majority are doing it for what I think you would call the right reasons. The same is not true, of course, of the retailers. who are selling organic wine if they can make more money, and as soon as they see the market dip, they change the number of facings they'll give in their store. So the vast majority, in my experience, again, going back over 20 years, there has been an up peaks and troughs of the sales of organic wine in the UK, very much based on how many facings Tesco, Sainsbury's, Asda and Morrison's will or will not give to those products. And it is equally true that a lot of the consumers buying those products are not even aware they're organic. They will buy them because they like the price, or they like the label, or they like the product. And it is also true that a lot of people making organic wine in the past were not making very good organic wine. They were doing it for good philosophical reasons, but as Robert knows, in the early days, the products were not great. They are a lot better today. So I think one of the coming back to the motion, the question in terms of motives, is it a marketing ploy? I think you have to look carefully at who you're talking about. It can be a marketing ploy by the retailers. Outside of our industry, for example, in the oil industry, when British Petroleum suddenly marketed themselves as Beyond Petroleum, it clearly was a marketing ploy and had pictures of wind farms all over their adverts. But I think you've got to ask the question, is it a marketing ploy or not? It depends on the motives of the person that's doing it.
Can I just ask, we've got ourselves, I think, inevitably into a focus on organic and sustainable. I'd like to broaden it into carbon neutral and some of the other areas, but I think Lynn mentioned earlier Banrock Station. Green brand? What's green about Banrock Station? What do people understand about Banrock Station? Is it organic? Is it sustainable? Is it nice to animals? Is it nice to... It's, I think there's a sort of green and cuddly feeling about it. I don't know whether the consumer necessarily either knows anything at all, or if they know something about it, I wonder what they think they know.
Well, it's talking about wetlands, which actually aren't very wet anymore, but...
another thought. So would you like to pick... Anyone pick up on the carbon...
Go ahead, John.
No, I was just going to mention another brand, which is very sort of environmentally friendly. It has the same platform as Banrock Station Yali from Chile. Is the America here who knows it intimately, Michael?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's a similar process. I mean, it's about responsibility and care for the environment. It's one of many initiatives and a very creditable one. And I think we come back to this point about wineries being responsible. The whole sustainability code in Chile was started by Calitera, who started promoting this idea. Ventisquero with their Yali project is a very good example of using another area. And you know, the list can go on. Other countries, other wineries that are using solar energy instead of conventional energy. So it's about responsibility, but it's not about selling more bottles or actually communicating sufficiently with the consumer about what they're doing. And I think this is the fundamental point. It may be cynical, and we may not be there yet, and I hope we do, and I know Nicola would urge us to get there much quicker. But it is going to take a lot longer for this to resonate, and for the wine trade generally to be able to communicate this. I think it's much more it's going to happen out of a purely from the point of view of responsibility to future generations, and that's certainly where those wineries, Ventisquero and Calitera and others, are coming from.
Andrew Reed first, and then you're next. Andrew.
I'd just like to ask the panel what their view is on the longevity of
the introduction of more sustainable, whether they're green or organic or whatever, but basically sustainable wines, in relationship to the key performance indicators which the trade use, and that is volume. Volume does not necessarily lead to a sustainable market, and I'd just like to know what the panel think of that.
We as an industry have always focused, certainly until recently, far more on what we think the consumer wants. So marketing strategies to the consumer have very much been what the producer wants to sell, what the retailer wants to sell. And I would certainly suggest that in the past we haven't asked sufficiently what does the consumer want, and therefore interpret what we give them accordingly. It's been very much that the range of wines you see out there, and I'm talking mainstream wine retailing, is very much driven by producer and retailer, not the consumer. It's only now, I think, that we're starting to listen to the consumer a little bit more. And as several of us have said, in terms of the consumer view of green and sustainable wines. Well, they do think it's pretty green anyway. As I said before, people think about vineyards and chateaus and glass being recyclable. The fact that organic wines aren't performing means that the consumer doesn't either feel the need for them or doesn't understand them. That's where the benefit of, let's say, fair trade is working, because the consumer can see a real benefit. And therefore, I think it comes back to the consumer has got used to paying less for wines, but actually getting improved quality on a few years ago. And actually, until we can persuade them otherwise, they've got no reason to trade up.
Very simple, actually. I think the question for me was all about the one of scale. Because if you take an average retailer, one of the top five, one of their lead promos is going to be looking at 250,000 cases. Now, how many green wineries can churn out 250,000 cases? And so until you get the scale, then, and until it's more generic in the vineyards, then...
I think Mr. Cox has got an answer for that.
Well, I don't know about an answer, but if I understand the question correctly, what you're saying is that can it be sustainable if you end up selling heaps more bottles of wine? Because sustainability is about protecting the environment and ensuring that the damage that's being done to the environment generally, and that's right the way through from soil erosion to pesticides and chemicals used in the soil, which will make the soil inert in future generations, right through to damage to local schools and roads, and the damage that carbon might do. I mean, all those things need to be addressed in order to make it sustainable. I mean, okay, we're back down to the derivation of the word sustainable, but it's about protection and responsibility for the future. It isn't that if you sell lots of wine from your sustainable practiced vineyard, you're going to run out of wine necessarily. You can still plant another vineyard, but if it's planted and managed and controlled and the winery and the offices are managed sustainably, then you can still make more. It's not a conclusion that that you'll run out or anything like that.
I've got an answer to this. I've spent some time looking at the whole sustainable issue, and I think Europe is, there is a tsunami heading in Europe's direction, because in the new world, sustainability, New Zealand will be 100% sustainable under some pretty strict rules, much stricter than anything we've seen, as I said, in France. So that means every bottle of Villa Maria and every bottle of Montana will be sustainable. Chile will follow the same route, so it means that every bottle of Cuisine Macul, of Contritoro, will be sustainable. We're talking about big volume brands here. I think you're looking at the free-range egg situation, where it will... Then you look at Europe, and you'll find that we won't be competing, the smaller producers in Europe, which won't matter unless, of course, the very clever man I heard giving a presentation at the Chilean seminar the other week, the point there was that he believes, and I think it's not implausible, that tariff barriers, or that sustainability or greenness at that level, will become a tariff barrier issue. Just as we are able to say to the Americans, we do not want your hormonally improved beef, it doesn't come up to our standards, it will be possible for the Americans to turn around and say, we will only buy wine that comes up to these standards. And by that point, it will mean that the whole of the new world will have got together. And by large, by definition, these are places where it is possible to do sustainable farming more easily. Not just the climate, but also the scale of production and so on makes it easier. And the little Italians and the little Germans and the little Spaniards and so on are going to find it much... Spain probably a bit easier, actually, because the scale of production. But those other countries are going to have a much harder time. So it may just work out that saying being non-sustainable is a bit like being the people who buy products from sweatshops in Asia at a time where everybody else has said we can only buy from accredited factories. Sorry, you were first, that's right.
My name is Americo Hernandez. I work for Viña Ventisquero, and Michael was talking about something, Jali. Jali is our green brand, but what I want to say is that 3 years ago, as part of what Chile is doing and we're seeing right now, there's a lot of wineries that are trying to go into this sustainability or green. And we as a winery and the other ones, we need to make a decision and a responsible decision. And Viña Ventisquero decide, even though the signals that we get for the market are strange, we took the commitment to be responsible and switch most of our protocol of production and the way that we are doing the business to a green platform. What happened with that, I mean, the most difficult part of that when you switch to that and you try to be leading, it gets more expensive, for sure. And, of course, then is the big decision. What are you going to do with this increase of cost? Are you going to pass or you're going to invest and think in the future? And that is where all the dilemma is with the wineries. In the case of Ventisquero, we were investing. We are not passing this to the product because what we want to do is to show to the consumers that they can drink wine that is a green wine and will not cost more for them. In the long term, what we see is the right way to go because all this investment will pay off for sure. And the other thing that I want to mention, going to your question, sustainability or green, doesn't mean that we're going to produce less volume. We can keep producing the same volumes. The key thing is the cost at the beginning because you need to get into this. But after in the medium long term, will not be a problem. And finally, the other thing is that getting to the UK market for us was very difficult because you get target. I mean, not target is the right word. Is that you come with this showing that you are going green, and you get a lot of the right word is not complain, but people don't believe what you are doing. And to start doing this thing right is what Chile is doing at the moment. We're going to get in a platform that we're going to be all aligned to show what we're doing. And you need to be very responsible because whatever you say that you are doing, you need to have a backup. And I have seen, not from Chile, but I have seen from other countries that are trying to get into this green schema, and then there's no backup. And that is really bad because at the end, that is not in favor of the whole idea of the green. That's it.
I think it's a very good point. I think the other thing to say is that the good sustainable programs, again, something that is unknown really in Europe, are a staged program. In other words, I am using so many liters of chemical per hectolitre this year. I am undertaking that over the next 10 years, that will reduce year on year. So I'm going to be better because I'm farming better, because my vines are healthier, et cetera, et cetera, which to me is the obvious route to be taking. And it's not something that, as I understand it, has been acknowledged anywhere in Europe where you either go 100% organic or you do the sort of halfway house of sustainability, which is a flat floor, as it were. You were next, I think. Yeah, go ahead.
Grapesmith. The first question is, I have three questions, if I can, very simple. The first one is a clarification. If when the bottles, when the wine is bottled in the UK, do the bottles are produced in the UK or do they need to be imported from perhaps Italy or whatever? The second one would be if any one of you think that Amarine change the subject of quality on the closure towards sustainability and let the quality issue use the sustainability to gain market instead of the quality issue. And the third one is probably very naive, but if there is a real request from the consumers to have recyclable bottles, is there any way to push the government to give perhaps tax incentives for use for importers or retailers using?
I won't profess to answer question two. I get asked about closures, but I can't answer about closures, so I'll leave that to someone else. Seems very complex. But in terms of glass bottles, it's an incredibly good question. And I think at any given time, the answer will be different as to when you ask the question. I think most at currently, as in terms of capacity and filling volume, all glass manufacturers, the main ones in this country, are Quinn Glass and Ardagh Glass, and they have the capacity to expand glass bottle production in all colours that you want. And those are the two main producers of glass bottles. However, some fillers do import. Indage would have been an example of that. And those bottles were predominantly coming in from Eastern Europe. And the main reason for that was around cost. So I think when it comes to what bottle is ultimately used for filling in this country, it will come down to cost. We are currently working on a lighter weight bottle, a 300-gram bottle with Quinn Glass, and the whole aim of that has been to develop a cost-neutral bottle, because sometimes much lighter bottles can turn out to be a bit more expensive. So that's been a real critical point for us. In terms of the colour imbalance or this issue of flint or clear and green, we have a situation in the UK, it doesn't matter what you recycle, whether it's flint or green. Both, in fact, green is actually best because it can, a green bottle can take a high recycled content. A flint bottle takes less, takes up to about 40%. But in the UK, we produce a vast majority of spirits bottles and food jars, and that's why the glass manufacturers have a higher demand for flint glass. But we obviously drink a lot of wine in green bottles, so that, as you alluded to, goes into aggregate or into some bottles made by Quinn, etc., or it goes overseas.
Nicola, is it fair to say, just picking up on your point about encouraging recycling of glass, would it be fair to say, something I've read, that the recycled glass, in terms of moving to the lightweight bottles, and as you've said, you're pushing to move from 340 grams to 300 grams, am I correct in thinking that actually in those lighter weight bottles, 95% of that is already recycled glass?
We could have said that 3 months ago. The glass industry have now decided that together, doesn't matter what the recycled content is, on average, all glass bottles made in the UK will have a recycled content of 70%. Whether that is higher or lower, depending on who you procure your glass from, is dependent. What has just been agreed is the methodology to calculate the recycled glass. But I do know that the likes of Ardagh were recently producing eco glass, which had a recycled content of about 99%. I think what it comes down to is what colour you are specifying and your tolerance levels.
What is eco glass?
Eco glass was just a marketing ploy.
Marketing ploy.
Yeah.
We rest our case.
I think we're going to go through some interesting step changes anyway. We made a decision to go down the PET route because I thought that I have a personal problem with the look of the 75 centilitre light glass bottle, which to me looks a cheaper product. We went down the route of the 1 litre PET, which looks like a glass bottle. The problem with it is that you then have the issue of selling a litre at a time, but it's something that it looks nice if you put it down on the dinner table, or it looks nicer. The problem with PET, as Nicola has alluded to elsewhere, is the recyclability of glass versus PET and the cost of production in terms of greenness is still an open issue, which I'd like to throw at you. But what I think is going to be a very interesting stage is we're moving very fast towards the biodegradable PET bottle. And that suddenly will be a closure form that will actually look after itself. And I think that will be an interesting area. Do you want to pick up on that?
Just very quickly on the PET route. PET is very recyclable. It will come down to colour. If it's slightly tinted or green, it all depends what you want that bottle to turn into. If you want it to come back into another food-grade product or packaging type, then often a clear PET bottle is best. If it is more green, then its likelihood is it will go into what we call open-loop recycling, so it's flower pots, those sorts of things. But there's nothing wrong with that. You've just ultimately, as Americana was saying, you've got to be clear about what's happening to your product. So there's actually nothing wrong with PET. It's actually just as recyclable as glass. So that's often a consumer misinterpretation. With PET, what you've got to ask questions are around shelf life and the type of barrier you have in your product. If you are using nylon barriers, you're restricting recyclability. but some of the new berries that are coming out are very recyclable. It's questionable whether it can come fully closed loop back into another wine bottle, but that is another question. Bioplastics, be very, very careful. They are good, but the current UK recycling infrastructure cannot cope with it. It actually contaminates the PET recycling stream.
But that's a UK issue.
UK issue.
Could I also ask you, since you're there, what is the recyclability in the UK of Tetra at the moment?
Of Tetra? Very interesting question. We run a on-pack recycling logo run through the British Retail Consortium. And in order to use that logo, 65% of local authorities have to collect your product in there to ensure that that packaging type can say widely recycled. Tetra Pak, let's say the liquid cartons, have ensured that 65% of local authorities collect Tetra Pak, and it is therefore considered a widely recycled product. But I will leave that. I won't make a personal comment.
If anybody missed the way that was, you could have that actually written down word for word as a script. I think there's a lot behind that.
I'm Pamela Gregory from Foster's, so... by association, I need to say a few words as far as who we are. No, I'm not defending. It's interesting to hear what everybody has to say on this. And I'm a little bit like you, Robert. I sit on the fence somewhat. But the one thing, as far as an organization, an international organization such as ourselves is concerned, is that rightly or wrongly, whatever we want, we are intrinsically linked with transportation. We know how much energy is emitted by the production of one bottle of 75 centiliter wine in the New World versus the CO2 emissions associated with bulk transportation. And we know that we can actually save about 50%, just up to 50% of CO2 emissions by bulk transportation in and around the world. An organization like us, where we're producing near on, I don't know, trillions of liters. Yeah, I don't need to do the calculation to tell you how huge it is.
The other thing I think Michael mentioned in terms of actually energy emitted at source, at winery, we have a huge initiative that has just covered all of our wineries in the US, where all wineries are now fitted with solar paneling. And I think they've saving, I'm sorry, the green lady from Foster's couldn't make it today, so my figures are a little bit shaky, but I think it's up to 20% saving on energy emitted there. I suppose the one thing that we are infinitely associated with is flexis. Flexis are not recyclable. We probably shift something in the region around about 7,500 flexis. They're huge. Anybody's ever seen one blown up? And unfortunately, unrecyclable. So at the moment, we are looking at research. Nicola, I'm not sure whether we've caught up with you in terms of what we do with these bags, because at the moment, they are going to landfill in China. Anybody got any ideas? Please let us know. I could go on and on and on, but I'll let somebody else have it.
I totally support and take on board your point about 50% saving in carbon emissions by shipping in bulk. But again, at the risk of being cynical, if the fact that bulk shipping wasn't cheaper with the current volume and obviously the reliance of Foster's on the supermarket wine industry, if the pressure was being put on by the retailers to lower costs and bulk shipping was more expensive, could I potentially suggest that there will be discussions in the boardroom about moving back to bottling at source if there was a cost saving in order to maintain the retailer requirements?
I don't think you can ever get away from the fact of the emissions that are generated by transportation in and around, you know, across the world. We've got 24 vessels at any one time floating around the world. I don't know why you would ever want to consider sort of moving back to...
cost saving for the retailer. If, I'm talking hypothetically, I'm saying if it was mooted that bottling at source was cheaper for whatever reason, this is a hypothetical comment, then I would suggest that a number of large producers would be reconsidering in order, again, to fulfil retailer requirements. I told you I'd play the cynic.
I'm coming to you in a second, David. Just another thought before, because we're running out of time in about 3 minutes. We are very focused, and we've all been very focused, on the 75 centilitre bottle. And actually now it's going to get even potentially worse, in quotes, because possibly because of UK duty rates, possibly because of alcohol consumption concerns or whatever, we're now about to start, various big brands are moving into the 50 centilitre bottle. And to me, every one of those bottles is made of something and it needs to be dealt with and handled. If you go back to the Australian model of 10 years ago, 50% of Australian wine was bought in bag-in-box. I'll pass the ball to Nicola in a second to talk about recyclability of a bag-in-box. But it meant that you had a number of litres in one block rather than 75 centilitres a bottle. I think the figure is now 34-37%. It's much lower than it was at the 55% that it was before. We used to have, I mean, it's not a particularly happy memory, but we used to buy beer in this country. We used to buy Party Sevens. It was disgusting, but the point was, it was a volume. We seem to be focusing very much on how we make these small containers, and would it not make more sense to actually have our product in larger containers in the household, which brings you back to your flexis. And added on to that, and I'd just like to throw this in as a thought, we don't want people to use heavy bottles because they're environmentally unfriendly. So is Christmas wrapping paper. I don't actually like getting my gifts wrapped up in yesterday's Guardian. I don't like giving people gifts wrapped up in yesterday's Guardian, so I still buy wrapping paper and feel bad about it. But maybe you just don't do as much of that. Maybe if we actually had more of our wine in larger containers and our sort of Saturday night wine came in a heavy bottle, in the overall impact, because there aren't as many Saturday night bottles, might not be as significant. Other David.
Sorry, the reason I was itching is just because we were talking about containers just then. And if wine didn't exist and someone planted their first vineyard and made wine, what container would they put it in? It probably wouldn't be a 75cl glass bottle, especially if most of it is going to sell in the off-trade and consumed at home. So I'm sort of saying, if you close your eyes now and open them in 10 years' time, will that container be different to what it is today? And the answer is absolutely yes. But will it be another form of PET? Will it be another form of a pouch? Probably not. And so I'm just sort of challenging the industry, which is immensely blinkered, I think we all are, to just maybe get the next generation of design students that haven't grown up in the wine industry to think about what wine would go into. And I think there is a product out there, whether it's a wood-based resin or some sustainably made container, that we should be putting wine in. But it won't be thought of by someone in the wine industry, I don't believe. As it happens, as we look at today, bag-in-box, I don't like the term, but bag-in-box is actually a really good container. Philip Goodman was involved in Stalls of Chelsea years ago. I was involved in it too. It was a pretty good way of storing wine in the home and having wine on demand. But what we think about is 3 litres and cheaper quality, and that's rubbish. As anyone who does business in Sweden will know, that actually it's actually quite a good container and a way of dispensing wine. But it isn't the only one, and we've got to think way, way more laterally than that.
I think that you're making...
Maybe New Zealand wine should be sold in sheep's
bladders. I think you've made a very good point, because I think that there's all of the talk about supermarkets selling 3 for £10. The focus has all been on the £10, the 3 bottles. To me, I'm looking at the 3 artifacts. We do not need those artifacts. Yes, with screw caps, they're going to actually be... the wine may not be poured away as readily as if they'd had corks in the old days. But those, if it had been 2 litres in one block, it would probably be a more environmentally friendly option than the 3. And we've got to educate people. And finally, the one thing's not really in this picture, but we have such difficulty in this country trading people up and getting people to spend another 5p or 10p on wine. We've now got Tetra litres at 3.15, I think 3.15 in Tesco. Perfectly decent wine, and that's, as far as I'm concerned, on Wednesday night, why not? But why don't we focus on the bulk wine, Wednesday wine, in the most environmentally
friendly packaging. We're focusing a bit more on packaging here, and then the other stuff maybe on the weekend. So we've covered a lot of ground. I think we might have got a bit bogged down in matters of sustainable and organic and so on, but I think we've covered other things, sort of questions of carbon neutrality and packaging, and also the fact that things are going to change as much as they are. So within the next, I think in the next 3 or 4 years, as people have said, what we're looking at today may not resemble the future. And I think wine is an area that is worth looking at in terms of the way we all behave. But this is a debate. As I said at the beginning, it is an apples versus oranges, but let's see where we stand on the vote. So can we take a vote, please, on who supports the motion that basically green marketing, it's a ploy? Right. That's actually not that many hands. I think that's 12 hands, is that right? And then let's take a vote from the other side. Okay, that's a much larger number. I can't count from here, but that looks like a bit 20, 20, 25. And then we've got some abstentions. Well, it looks to me as if we're generally pretty convinced that it is legitimate to use marketing about green issues, but you know, there is also obviously a lot of confusion over what is going to be credible and what's real and how it's done. But thank you all very much. I'd like to thank my panel. I'd like to thank you particularly for giving up your time. I think it is a useful subject, and I think it's something that we're going to all need to give a lot more thought to over the next few years. And the thing I would say to you all is I presume that everyone in this room has got access to a computer and the internet. The great beauty of being involved in an event like this is that it doesn't have to stop here. You can all go back and carry on the debate, look stuff up, find out what's going on. I know that this is being turned into a podcast, so you can listen to it, you can hear what was said again. But please spread the word, because I think that it's not just the people in this room who've taken the time, you who've taken the time to be here. It's also all those people who don't really, who aren't following the game, who need to be brought on board. So thank you all very much.
That ends this week's podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. Next week, we're going to be back to the situation normal, and we're going to be looking at wine education again. So until next week, cheers. And good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.